UAB Medcast is an ongoing medical education podcast. The UAB Division of Continuing Education designates that each episode of this enduring material is worth a maximum of 0.25 AMA PRA Category 1 credit. To collect credit, please visit uabmedicine.org/medcast and complete the episode's post-test.
Welcome to UAB Medcast, a continuing education podcast for medical professionals. Bringing knowledge to your world, here's Melanie Cole.
Welcome. Today we're examining breast reconstruction and specifically prepectoral expander-based reconstruction. And here to tell us about that is Dr. Brad Denny. He's a plastic surgeon and an assistant clinical professor at UAB Medicine. Dr. Denny, what's been done so far as reconstruction after breast cancer surgery? What's different now and how has your field evolved in this area?
Well, that's a very good question. I think when you're talking about breast reconstruction, there's two different camps. The first is, and it's the most common way to reconstruct a breast worldwide, using an expander, what you refer to as prepectoral. The older method of using a breast reconstruction, of reconstructing the breast with a tissue expander, involved placing the expander under the pectoralis muscle. Now, that option is still done widely and is still common. However, there were issues associated with that. Mainly, expanding the pectoralis muscle with the tissue expander in a lot of patients did cause a lot of pain during the expansion process. The other disadvantage of that is when you remove the expander and put the implant under the pectoralis muscle, when patients would flex their pectoralis muscle either naturally or with exercise, it would produce what's called animation deformity, in which the muscle would literally produce a rippling effect over the implant and could be cosmetically not great. And the third reason why putting the expander under the muscle was not as beneficial is if radiation was needed, the radiation tended to make the pectoralis muscle very hard and firm and fibrotic almost, and would therefore really distort the final result of the reconstruction by pulling or lateralizing the implant. Now, a more advanced technique is to place the expander above the muscle. So that way, the expansion process is less painful because we're expanding the skin and not the muscle itself. And we avoid the animation deformity because we don't have the muscle over the expander to cause that rippling effect. And the third point is it's also better in light of radiation. You don't have the fibrosis of the muscle to cause contraction of the final implant and therefore distort the final appearance of the reconstruction. On the other side of the spectrum reconstruction, in terms of how we have progressed and how things have improved, is what's known as autologous reconstruction. And that's by using the patient's own tissue to reconstruct a breast. One of the earliest methods of this was the TRAM flap, and that's an acronym that stands for transverse rectus abdominis muscle reconstruction. That reconstruction is still used today, but it's the oldest method of using autologous tissue, in that an ellipse of skin, fat, and in this case, the entire rectus muscle. The rectus muscle is the six-pack muscle. The muscle allows you to do sit-ups. The entire muscle and the skin and fat of the lower abdomen was used to reconstruct a breast. We have made significant advancements in that realm of breast reconstruction, in that there is now the DIEP flap, or that's also an acronym for deep inferior epigastric flap. And in that flap, we're able to isolate the blood vessels to the skin and fat of the lower abdomen and preserve the entire rectus muscle, therefore allowing the donor site to be less invasive and to cause less issues. All this has been both on the expander end and on the autologous reconstruction to the DIEP flap. All this is possible because of better technologies and a better microsurgical skill that's been honed over time.
What a great description. You have so many tools in your toolbox now, Dr. Denny, and it seems like not so very long ago, there were just not that many for women that had undergone mastectomy or breast cancer surgery. So speak about patient selection criteria. How do you decide which of these many choices that you've given us today to use on particular patients?
Right. And patient selection is key. And patients may come in and they say, well, I want this particular breast reconstruction, but they may or may not be candidates necessarily for that reconstruction. And just to go through each one, it's a complex decision-making process, but it really takes into account each patient's specific aspects about themselves as individuals. For example, tissue expanders are great in patients who have a low BMI or who have a low body mass index, in that they don't have a lot of fat deposit. That being said, and then on the flip side, someone who may want a DIEP flap reconstruction using the abdomen, if they have a low BMI, they're not a great candidate for that a lot of the times because they simply don't have the tissue that will provide that type of a reconstruction. Other things to consider would be medical comorbidities. A DIEP flap breast reconstruction can take a long time. And if you're talking about reconstructing both breasts with that flap, it could even take 12 hours. So someone who has heart or lung problems, putting through a very long reconstructive surgery is not a good idea. So therefore, they would not be good candidates for a DIEP flap. Other things to consider, smokers are not, unfortunately, are not breast reconstruction candidates because smoking really inhibits wound healing. And if you are inhibiting wound healing because of smoking, you're bound to have complications. So in our practice, you have to be nicotine free for 4 weeks before you can undergo a breast reconstruction. Other things to consider are if the patient if we know they're going to need radiation as part of their treatment for breast cancer. If we know a patient's going to need radiation, then in our practice at UAB, we do not immediately do a complex reconstruction that would involve a flap because we don't want that radiation to radiate the flap and either, one, potentially lose the flap or kill the flap, or two, have that radiation result in a less cosmetic result. So therefore, in the face of radiation, we start off by placing a tissue expander, and then once the radiation is complete, we then determine what the next step is based upon the patient's desires or what's best for the patient in terms of their overall medical status or body habitus. Sometimes we can simply just remove the expander and replace it with an implant and do what's called fat grafting. That's where we liposuction the abdomen or the thighs and take the fat from those areas and inject it into the skin envelope of the breast reconstruction. We have found that fat grafting actually helps rejuvenate radiated skin because there are stem cells within the fat that provide a milieu of wound healing cytokines that literally help rejuvenate the skin. Or at that point, we could remove the expander. And if the patient is a candidate, potentially perform a DIEP flap reconstruction, or we could even do a latissimus flap reconstruction where the muscle and skin of the back is used to cover an implant.
Wow, that's a lot of information for other providers. Dr. Denny, does previous breast density make a difference in your decision?
It does not. The breast density is more of a question. That's the other thing to know about breast reconstruction. It's a multidisciplinary focus. I work closely with my surgical oncologist who deal with breast cancer and the surgery to treat breast cancer, as well as the radiation oncologist and the oncologists themselves. The breast density has more to do with monitoring of the breast with mammograms and possibly MRIs. What is a concern to me is after the breast tissue is removed and the skin of the breast is left behind, how thick the skin is, and making sure the skin has good blood flow. Because if we're planning, especially on using a tissue expander, we really want the skin that's left behind to have good blood flow so that it could adequately support a tissue expander without the risk of possibly infection or exposure of that expander and or implant.
Dr. Denny, as we wrap up, tell other physicians and providers what you'd like them to know about breast reconstruction, when to refer, and how this can help the referring physician be assured their patients are getting the best care.
Absolutely. First, I'll address the latter part of your question. I think UAB is a flagship of excellence for breast cancer care and reconstruction. The best way to have a patient referred to UAB and get involved with our group of excellent clinicians is to start by a referral to one of our breast surgical oncologists, either Dr. Lancaster, Parker, or Frontieris. They can, and if they have active breast cancer, they can determine the treatment necessary for that cancer in general, and through them, they refer to either myself or one of my colleagues on the breast reconstruction end. I think it's important for patients and providers as well to know that breast reconstruction can be a lengthy process. It's often a process that is two stages, especially if a tissue expander is involved, and it can take more than one or two surgeries to get the aesthetic result that the patient and the providers are after. I tell patients breast reconstruction is a marathon, not a sprint. And I think that's especially relevant because not only are patients going through significant surgeries to reconstruct their breasts, but they're also dealing with the cancer end of things. So there can be a need for support with this. So again, I tell the mantra is it's a marathon and not a sprint. And I think that helps put into focus what goes into breast reconstruction.
Such an interesting topic. Dr. Denny, thank you so much for coming on, sharing your expertise, and explaining the many options available for breast reconstruction after cancer surgery. A community physician can refer a patient to UAB Medicine by calling the MIST line at 1-800-UAB-MIST. That's 1-800-822-6478. You're listening to UAB Medcast. For more information on resources available at UAB Medicine, you can go to uabmedicine.org/physician. That's uabmedicine.org/physician. This is Melanie Cole. Thanks so much for tuning in.